Teaching Tax Flow podcast, where the goal is to empower and educate you to legally and ethically minimize taxes paid over your lifetime.
Hey, everybody, and welcome back to the podcast. Today, episode 77, we are going to look at those STR loopholes, but a little bit of information for you. You are only a couple weeks away from that tax deadline, or as some refer to as tax day. However, go back to episode 25 we did here, and about a year ago, almost to the date, check it out, the value of a tax extension. But before we jump into today's topic, let's take a brief moment as always and thank our episode sponsor.
This podcast is sponsored by The Mortgage Shop. Are you looking to qualify for an investment credit loan without jumping through hoops? That's easy. They have loans with LTV up to 89.99%. Exploring their products and discovering how they can work for you is simple. Just visit mortgage.shop or call 865-325-2566 and tell them TTF sent you.
Hey, everybody, and welcome back to the Teaching Tax Flow podcast. As you've seen in the title, the show notes, etc., and in the intro that you just heard, today we are going to talk about the STR loophole. So, acronyms you know we love in the Teaching Tax Flow world. I mean, heck, the IRS has one, Internal Revenue Service. They go by IRS. Naturally, we love our acronyms. STR, short-term rental. So STR loopholes, today, we are going to explain those and what they are, what they aren't, and we got a great guest. But before we introduce him, Chris Picuro, you know what I'm going to say. Welcome back to your own show. How's it going?
Thank you for welcoming back to our show, Johnny T. I appreciate it. Very excited about our guest today. And we have had a ton of people in the Teaching Tax Flow community. And actually, I believe any of our content on short-term rental tax strategy or loophole is in our top three of consumption. So we knew we've been wanting to do this topic for 6 months, but we wanted to wait till we had a guest that not only lives and breathes in this space, but also can give our listeners some practical tips towards the end of the podcast on what to do next. And this is a strategy that we've used personally, and it's really exciting. And ultimately, it allows taxpayers that invest in qualified short-term rental properties to utilize cost segregation studies and potentially offset W-2 wages or retirement income or any type of other income and navigate around the passive activity rules. But Arda is going to explain that to you as well. And yeah, we're very excited to have Arda Burkan join us. Arda, welcome to the show. And can you give us a little bit of history about yourself and how you found yourself operating and running and co-hosting short-term rental property?
Thanks for the kind introduction and great to be with you guys today. I'm a real estate investor. I also built a short-term rental business from scratch in South Florida back in 2020. I own a real estate consulting firm named Short-Term Rental Loophole. The main reason I got into short-term rental business and launched my own, consulting practice is because short-term rental properties are a great investment for high-income earners. They deliver strong cash-on-cash returns, and underlying asset often appreciates. To give you an idea, my first short-term rental in South Florida generated $210,000 revenue, and the net income was about $63,000 in the first year of operation. Obviously, those, that kind of numbers were impressive. That's exactly the cash flow, that I wanted to, get from the first property. So, but in addition to that, short-term rentals are also offered, those with high W-2 income, a massive opportunity to reduce their tax burden.
And I'm going to touch on what makes a property a short-term rentals, according to the IRS, because typically, rental properties, like I said, are passive investments, and they are considered, so you have the passive activity loss rules that you tangle with, meaning if you have losses from rental properties. Now, we know in Teaching Tax Flow, one of the laws is that cash flow doesn't equal tax flow. So you could very well have a rental property that is a positive cash flow, putting money in your pocket, but on your tax return shows a loss. And that loss is due to the depreciation deduction. And that depreciation deduction can be fueled by using bonus depreciation, which is further fueled by using a cost segregation study. So let's say you have a rental property that's putting cash in your pocket, but you put a lot of money into it to start up. You got some furniture, fixtures, you bought it, maybe even bought it turnkey, and you have a large depreciation deduction. Well, in order to avoid, I should say, and legally and ethically avoid the passive activity rules, if the property is considered a short-term rental property, then it's considered a commercial operation, if you will. So what makes a short-term rental property? Well, there's a few different components. The first component is going to be the average length of stay of the tenant. So if the average length of stay of the tenant is 7 days or less, you're typically going to have a short-term rental property. Or if the average stay is 30 days or less and you are providing substantial services, that's a very, very rare. Think about that situation would be is if you owned a property or let's say you owned a big lot and you have four cabins on it and you live in the fifth cabin and you're the one changing the sheets, preparing the meals, extremely, extremely hands-on with the guests. So typically it's going to be that 7 days or less. There are some rules as far as how many days you could stay in there. Personally, it's got to be 14 days or less or less than 10% of the use days. But typically you're talking about a vacation rental. And you also have to have something called material participation. And this is very important. So to obtain material participation, and we have some resources as far as how to track these hours, there are seven different tests. The easiest test and the most likely test you're going to pass when you're dealing with a short-term rental property is the 100-hour rule. What the 100-hour rule says is that you've put in at least 100 hours of time into operating that short-term rental property, and you have more time than anyone else on that property. So in general, if you're listening to this and you own a short-term rental property, you're considering it and you self-manage it and you're putting the posts on Airbnb, VRBO, or use software like Hospitable or any of these softwares that manage your reservations and your client communications, then you're most likely meeting that material participation threshold. So if you meet that material participation, you have a short-term rental property, thus the loophole, and then you could potentially show a large loss from that rental property with the cost segregation study and offset, as Arta said, high W-2 wages. So let's say you have a couple and one spouse says that $900,000 of W-2 wages, the other one is a homemaker but runs the Airbnb property, and it could be remotely run, you could potentially have hundreds of thousands of dollars of losses from that short-term rental property and offset the W-2 wages. So hopefully I explained it in a fashion that's kind of digestible.
And Chris, really quick too, before we go too far on, so me being, you know, not the tax guy, the voice of the average Joe, right? So just to clarify, right, we're talking about some of the short-term rental loophole. So to some people, and I know we mentioned this maybe like a dozen or so episodes back and clarified there too. When we talk about loophole, we're not saying like, oh, this is a, hey, I gotcha, Uncle Sam, and doing anything unethical. This is basically just navigating our way through the tax, quote-unquote, system. Is that correct, or am I totally off on that one?
You know, an excellent explanation, I believe. But very basically, the short-term rental loophole refers to a section of the tax code that says if the average customer stay at a short-term rental for 7 days or less, then your short-term rental is not a rental activity for the purpose of the tax code. It's treated as any other business. Ultimately, that means, like Chris explained very well, all you need to do is materially participate in that business for the losses to be non-passive and offset your W-2 income.
Absolutely. So now we've defined that. Arta, I want to pick your brain because this is your wheelhouse. For someone listening to this, what are the things, and feel free to mention certain markets, but what are the things people should look for when selecting? I'm going to first start with a market and then start with a property, because you are very good in analyzing that what we call COC, cash on cash, CNC, cash on cash return. You know, there's properties by the beach and theme parks and mountain and there's condos and two bedrooms and three bedrooms. So first, you know, what type of, and there's some where they're more seasonal. So what type of market are we looking for typically? And you might say, well, it depends on the price point, right? And then what type of property are you seeing that are getting the best returns?
This is a great question. And, you know, like, again, investing in short-term rentals can be an incredibly effective way to save money on your taxes. And buying a short-term rental and expanding your earning potential by accumulating additional properties is a game plan used by high net worth individuals nationwide, right? But when we talk about, you know, like the cash on cash returns, ROIs, you know, like the number that I really focus on, at least I would like to see a 15, you know, like, or 20% cash on cash return. And I strongly recommend, you know, like, purchasing a single family home, a larger property, preferably, you know, like, at least four, preferably, you know, like, in a five bedroom, due to the fact that you can generate more revenue from that particular, you know, like, kind of property compared to a two or three bedroom. Because when I look at the, you know, like, the short-term rental markets, usually every single market nowadays is saturated, right? But when you talk about, you know, like, on a larger properties, five bedroom, you know, like, or six bedroom, the competition is much less. So it would give you the, you know, like, the opportunity to charge, you know, like, more average daily rates, which would increase your gross revenue if you look at it from an, you know, like, an annual perspective.
That's a great point, and I've heard that quite a bit, where you're buying a studio, buying a one bedroom, buying a two bedroom unit, you know, is a good entry point potentially cost wise, but you're also then competing against hotel rooms. You're competing against even a room at a, you know, Residence Inn that's a two bedroom. So four or five bedrooms are going to be better for a bigger party. So what market? So I do like that. And I guess it depends. You know, there's certain markets that don't have a lot of big chain hotels. So what markets are you seeing? What should someone look for in a market? Should someone that's going to self-manage your property be concerned about being able to drive to the property, or is distance an issue, or is it something more picking the right market?
It really boils down to, you know, like, determining the budget. You'll need to know how much money, you know, you can work with and what price range you'll be looking in. And that will impact the type of property you can search for and the area you will be looking in. You know, like, I always tell, you know, like, an investor, establishing a budget up front will save many headaches in the long run and get you aligned with your goals. But to answer your question, I do like, you know, like, in a certain markets. One of them is North Carolina, especially Asheville area, because, like, I've been seeing, you know, like, really good, you know, like, kind of cash on cash returns, ROIs, you know, like, in that particular market. And we've been, you know, like, kind of chasing deals actively, you know, like, in the Asheville area. But obviously, location, location, location. Again, you know, like, kind of, when I look at, you know, like, the Asheville market, you know, like, the proximity or the distance between the downtown Asheville and your property, you know, like, would be the determining factor, because it's going to affect your the rates, you know, like, you can charge on a daily basis. Besides, you know, like, in North Carolina and Asheville, you know, Montana, it's and Maine, you know, those markets are not very saturated. And, you know, like, you were able to find actually very nice, you know, like, properties, large, you know, kind of single family homes, you know, like, in those markets.
There, you've got different markets, right? So some markets, like, I'm going to give you, like, the middle, you know, Orlando market seems to be, the occupancy rates are super high, but, you know, revenue per night's low. So obviously something to consider, and we considered as well, is that, you know, don't be so focused on occupancy percentage, because that just means there's a lot more foot traffic, right? Focus on your revenue and your average nightly, you know, revenue. Which the next question is going to kind of tie into that, is what amenities are you seeing are most in demand, and in are most properties that perform well? Is theming, in your opinion, the property of value to a potential buyer?
Great question. So, you know, obviously, if you are talking about Orlando, I would say you definitely need a pool. In addition to that, I would say you would need, you know, like, a pool heater, because during the you know, like, the winter months, that's what we call, you know, the high season in Florida. If you are catering to, you know, like, kind of high-end customers, the, you know, like, the temperatures drop during, you know, like, January, February, March. You need to be able to, you know, like, offer that, you know, like, kind of nice amenity. a private pool as well as, you know, like a pool leader. But in addition to that, I've been seeing, especially in Asheville, North Carolina market, you know, a TV room. And when I say a TV room, a luxury, you know, like on a TV room with big chairs, big, you know, like on a screen, a nice, you know, like outdoor patio with a fire pit, because it creates, you know, like that amazing, you know, like an ambience due to, you know, like the global warming, I would say. It doesn't get that cold right now, you know, like we're in March, right? I'm in Nashville, but I was in North Carolina about 2 weeks ago and it was a lovely day. And after 5-6 p.m., if you have them, you know, like the heaters, you know, like an outdoor heaters, then you can definitely, you know, like an hang out outside and, you know, like you can watch, you know, like the beautiful views. But so those are, you know, like the amenities, you know, like that come to my mind. But if you are looking at a property in, you know, Maine or Montana, definitely a hot tub, you know, like kind of would be a great, you know, like amenity.
No, I agree that it really just depends on, I mean, some type of pool or hot tub is going to be nice, because if someone's renting a home, they want that privacy to have their own pool instead of using a hotel pool, if you will. So, and that's, you know, that's really important. Let's talk about the owner side. In your opinion, what are some of the relationships locally that are important to establish? Obviously, people are concerned about cleaners and handymen and, you know, the operation. Let's say you're managing the property remotely. What are some of those key relationships that people, owners should, or in potential owners should consider?
Yeah, I would say that the single most important, you know, like on a relationship that you would need to build as a, you know, like a short-term rental investor is finding, you know, like the top-notch cleaners. Because just imagine if it's a, you know, like a luxury property, you checked into the property and if it's not, you know, like extremely clean, or if it doesn't feel clean, then it's going to create, you know, like a tremendous amount of discomfort for, you know, like your guests. That's not something that you want to run into. So I strongly, you know, like I'm going to recommend, I'm not a big fan of actually leveraging, you know, like cleaning companies. What we did in South Florida, we really focused on, you know, like the local neighborhood cleaners. And, you know, like we negotiated, you know, like on a different deals with them. Obviously, whenever, you know, like they delivered, you know, like the services that we were looking for, we tipped them well and we leveraged their services more. But from my point of view, definitely you need to have multiple different, you know, like kind of cleaning crews due to the fact that anything could happen, you know, like they may get sick, they may, you know, like kind of need to run, you know, like they're, you know, like their situation kind of different, right? They may, you know, like kind of overcommit or whatever the reason is. So you need to have a backup plan, right? That's the one thing. The second, you know, like on a most important relationship that you need to have as a, you know, like a short-term rental investor in the local market that you're operating is the handyman. And what I did, you know, like in South Florida, literally knock on, you know, like my neighbor's doors and ask them, you know, like handyman recommendations. Because like you could use Google, you could use Yelp, but nowadays, you know, like everybody talks great about, you know, like on everybody's services. Then, you know, like the neighbor tells me he's been, you know, like kind of leveraging a certain handyman and, you know, like he's on time, he does a good job, he's reliable. That's, you know, like the handyman that I want to work with. So that's how, you know, like I was able to build, you know, like kind of strong relationships. And, you know, like that's how I built, you know, like kind of team. And obviously we replicate, you know, like the same thing in other markets. And that's how, you know, like kind of we delivering like a certain customer experience. That's what it really boils down to on Airbnb or VRBO. That's how you need to differentiate yourself from the other, you know, like an operators.
Yeah, I mean, having the handyman and having the cleaners is huge. And, you know, something that I, even though I'm in this world somewhat on my own, having a redundancy is really important. Just think, like you said, I mean, we're all human, so we are unreliable. Even if we want to be reliable, we're just unreliable. Anything could happen.
Yeah, exactly. And over the weekends, you know, like, and you would need some help, right? Like it could be Sunday, it could be, you know, like on a Saturday. And the same thing, you know, like something could break down. You need to have that, you know, like kind of support system, you know, like in place. And the best way to, you know, like kind of develop those relationships is basically leveraging other people's relationships in the neighborhood. And as long as you're a good neighbor, you know, like you're not going to have any problems getting those, you know, like kind of referrals from the other folks, based on my experience.
And Art, I actually have a question for you too. So we, You talked a little bit about, or actually, Chris, I think you had mentioned it too, right? Like, obviously, it takes cash to invest. Well, not necessarily, but you obviously need resources to invest. In your experience, kind of aligning or finding those investors, in a sense, who are willing and knowledgeable enough to invest in short-term rentals, have a lot of the people and individuals that you've talked to, families, et cetera, are they even aware that short-term rentals really are a great investment on their side? And then to follow that up too, so obviously are a lot of them aware of it, but then also in conversations with them, what are some of the concerns they might have? Is it I completely want to be hands-off. This sounds like it's too much work for me. So maybe walk us through that a little bit for our listeners that, you know, maybe have been looking for something like this, but never truly looked at it as an opportunity that they could take advantage of.
Based on my experience, most of the investors do not have the expertise to analyze markets and deals properly. And I'm not trying to be harsh, but I have to kind of point that out. They also don't know how to buy a short-term rental property the right way. And also what I've been seeing, most of them lack an understanding of the tax code. From my point of view, finding the highest profitable short-term rental property and then buying it the right way, using it for non-passive losses and leveraging, advanced tax strategies are not straightforward issues. And these are often, these are often huge amounts of money at stake. So it makes people, kind of very nervous, right? Including myself. So what I can tell, it really requires the help of a team. I would say it's specifically a real estate CPA and a short-term rental, investment expert.
It's funny, here I am in the middle. So we got a great CPA and a SDR expert right here on the show. So no, this is great.
Yeah, it's interesting because I've loved real estate since I was 5 years old playing Monopoly. So wherever I go, I'm always interested in the market. Even if I'm not really going to purchase a property there, it fascinates me. And then I'm always thinking like, okay, well, and I think a lot of times what happens with people that aren't, working with a professional and realize that there are people like Arda out there that can help them analyze the property. Because a lot of times what I see from my perspective is I like going to the Smoky Mountains. I like going to Orlando or the beach, in a family. Well, we're going twice a year. We're paying all this money to stay there. And then they start looking around. Oh, maybe we should buy something. And they're kind of influenced by their heart more than their head a little bit when they're buying the property. So before John wraps us up here, Artie, can you kind of talk about, what are some of the things that you do? And we're going to leave that information, in our show notes. But what are some of the things you do? Because you work specifically with investors on market selection and property selection. So what are some of the things that you help them understand and maybe go beyond the emotional part of the property and location?
This is the, the million-dollar question, right? Briefly, being successful in real estate investing largely comes down to the property that is chosen. And a successful investment property is the one that provides the highest ROI for the longest period of time and appreciates in value. We basically, me and my team, we handle all aspects of finding the most profitable short-term rental investment property, from deep market research, lending you the highest profitable property, teaching you furnishing and managing your property. So that's what, we do, and that's what we are really good at.
So Arda, this is one that's pretty time relevant. Obviously, we'll use Airbnb for example. So anybody that follows the short-term rental market obviously has heard about significant changes through Airbnb. So again, Airbnb is just one piece of it, right? So looking at New York, and we don't have to get into the political and too much of the regulations of it, but it, in turn, maybe talking about how you help navigate through some of those. So looking at New York City, for example, there was a giant blow to the short-term rental market when they basically came in and theoretically swung a hammer and wiped it out. So do you find yourself, I'm going to answer my own question, but then I'm going to ask you another one. So I know for a fact that you help them navigate those markets. So for example, if you have somebody, say I'm
say I live in Michigan. I really love going to New York City. I looked at it as a dream of owning a short-term rental there. You say, hey, John, you know what? It's probably not a good idea right now, you know, based on et cetera, et cetera. So that's a huge part of what you do, correct, is really helping guide them through, you know, navigating those. Because more and more markets are getting regulations, some help, some hinder, right, on investing.
Yeah, absolutely. And let's talk about, you know, like kind of just to give you, you know, like a specific example, let's talk about Asheville really quick, right? Like you cannot run a short-term rental within the city limits of Asheville. And, you know, like I run into investors, you know, like they're looking at, you know, like on a certain properties in Asheville. And when I tell them, if you were to, you know, like kind of buy this property, you know, like there's going to be a 30-day minimum on this particular home that you are looking at. Oh, we didn't know that. So you really need to, you know, like kind of pick up the phone and call, you know, like this city and ask them and get in touch with the right department, the short-term rental department, you know, like, and, you know, like have a conversation with them on the phone and get their email address and send them, you know, like a follow-up email and, you know, like give them the address and get their, get approvals, because email is like a written approval nowadays. Like, and that's what we do, for instance, for our clients, because honestly, I run into, you know, like on so many, you know, like investors, they, you know, are going to tell me that they talked to the real estate agent and they were told that they can operate, legally operate a short-term rental in a particular market, and turn out that that wasn't the case. So, I mean, when I tell them, obviously, if you leverage our services, that's something, you know, like kind of we look into, you know, like for every single, you know, kind of investor. And it's a, you know, like a huge deal. But if you are doing it, you know, like on your own, you must, you know, like kind of pick up the phone, call, you know, like the city and verify the information and give them, you know, like the physical address and ask them, you know, like basically, can it be a, you know, like on a short-term rental? I'm looking to, you know, like rent this property on Airbnb or VRBO less than 7 days. Would that be okay? And I mean, based on my experience, because we've been looking at, you know, like on so many different markets, talking to, you know, like kind of city officials, I never run into a situation where it took more than 24 hours to get a straight answer from them, you know, like the city. So that would be, you know, like my suggestion or recommendation for, you know, like the real estate investors.
And really the value of working with somebody like yourself, right? Like I'm thinking of here, even, you know, the smaller town that I live in here, there's regulations in place that if you were to call the city office, well, not here specifically, but if you call a city office, you may get a response from the city and the thumbs up. However, you might be in a neighborhood, HOAs, POAs, et cetera, that say absolutely not, right? So that's where, you know, your knowledge, not only, and I'm speaking for you a little bit, but I'm going to make the assumption, you know, your knowledge as far as for not just knowing the answer, but knowing how to get the answer and who to talk to and really how to navigate it is huge. So on that note, I don't want to cut anybody off. However, I know we can talk on this forever. So Chris, do you have anything else you wanted to ask Artie here before we skip along? Because I know we're going to have to do another show on this one for sure, because I have all kinds of questions.
Right, absolutely. I want to thank him for coming on the show. And, you know, if you're listening to this, you either own a short-term rental property or you're deeply considering it, please reach out to us and we can help guide you in the right direction, and you'll pay a lot less tuition. Tuition's money you pay to learn something that's very expensive. And exactly, there are several, as you heard on this podcast, there are several considerations when deploying the strategy. And this special sauce of Teaching Tax Flow is that we help people in our community implement a strategy. We tell them about it and we help them implement it. So thanks Arda and John, and I hope everyone jumps in with questions.
Even my dog's excited, if you can't hear him in the background. But yeah, Arda, definitely thank you for joining us here on this show and really, you know, sharing your knowledge on this. Obviously, STRs, so short-term rentals, getting a little bit more popular in some areas and retracting a little bit from the others. So we look forward to having you back soon.
Yeah, great to be with you guys. Thank you again.
Absolutely. And as I always like to close it up here on the Teaching Tax Flow podcast, same time, technically, but a different week, same day of the week, different topic, back here on the Teaching Tax Flow podcast. Hey, everybody, John here from the Teaching Tax Flow team. Thank you for joining us here on this episode as we looked at those STRs and STR loopholes with Chris and Arda. And of course, we make things as easy as we possibly can here. If you are interested in any more information on the STR loophole, or
really just want to pick these guys' brain, you can actually go directly to strtax.guru. We've made it that simple for you. strtax.guru, G-U-R-U. You can literally fill out the form on there. It goes directly to these guys. They'll get back to you. And they love discussing this topic amongst many others. So take advantage of that. Take advantage of the private Facebook group, DefeatingTaxes.com. We'll send you directly there. And as always, keep sending us the show topic, information, guest info, anything that you guys want to hear on the podcast. That's what we're here for. So until next time, we'll see you very soon.
The content provided is for educational purposes only. We encourage you to seek personalized investment advice from your financial professional. For all tax and legal advice, please consult your CPA or attorney. Investment advisory services are offered through Cabin Advisors, a registered investment advisor. Securities are offered through Cabin Securities, a registered broker-dealer. The content of this podcast does not constitute an offer of securities. Offerings can only be made through an offering memorandum, and you should carefully examine the risk factors and other information contained in the memorandum.